Okay. Hey guys. Great to see you. Here we go. I just posted, I think for like the third time, the doc that I'm going to be referring to on the side of in the chat. But let's get started. This year was called in this really long, like terrible name, something like the story that we don't tell. Why don't we just tell a story of Sefer Shmot at the Seder? Which if you think about it is a pretty decent question. We've got a whole book called Sefer Shmot, literally talks about Yetziat Mitzrayim. And the question you kind of got to ask yourself is like, wait a second, why do we have to come up with a whole new text called the Haggadah instead of telling the story of Sefer Shmot? Now, there are two directions we could go with this. Direction number one that we could do is go on to say, no, we actually do tell a story, just like in a different way. And I would actually challenge you to pick out one part of the Seder that is explicitly telling a story. Manishtana. That tell a story? Not really. Talks about what's different this night than other nights. What about Avadim Hayinu? Sort of, but it really just tells us that we're slaves and doesn't tell us about any of the Makot. What about Masei Berebi Eliezer? No, not really a story either. Just talks about people telling the story. Could have just told us Sefer Shmot. Would have been much, much easier. But what I want to tell you is the following. I think deliberately, most of the Haggadah doesn't utilize Sefer Shmot. I see your hand, Avi. 1 second. Most of the Haggadah deliberately doesn't use Sefer Shmot. In fact, when we do explicitly quote from Tanakh, we quote from Sefer Dvarim, a text called Arami Oved Avi. And we're going to talk a little bit about why. But Avi, go for it. Ask a question beforehand.
What about Haggadah? That's telling like a progression of a story.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like the Shmot story, like Yetziat Mitzrayim, like Moshe goes down and redeems the Jewish people with the 10 Makot. Do you know how many times Moshe is mentioned in all of the Haggadah? Once, and like on the periphery. You'll find it when you're going through the Haggadah. You'll find that one Moshe reference, but it's like, it's not there. So that's the big question, okay? In order to answer the question, I want to back up to the first text that we recite at the Seder. I didn't get a chance to share this with anybody who's here, so this could be new, okay? First text that we all sing is Halach Ma'anya Diachalua Vatana, right? We sing Halach Ma'anya. And the question that I think everybody usually asks is, why are we inviting guests at this point in the meal? A little bit rude. Imagine, William, you're sitting down for a meal and you're like, all right, now's the time to invite the guests. Like, no, you kind of send out the invitations a little bit beforehand. The best way to, I think, respond to this idea is to do what I did. If you look at the text that I put up here, I put little quotations here, which explains entirely what is going on. Again, remember, in the back of our head, the question is, why don't we just tell the story of Sefer Shmot? And you'll see as we go along, a little bit of that answer emerging. But now, we're in the text of Halach Ma'anya. Just to translate, Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction. We're talking about matzot, the achalu avatana that our forefathers ate, Ba'ara de Mitzrayim in Egypt. Okay, we're holding up the matzah, we're pointing at it, saying this is the matzah that we ate in Egypt. Listen to what I do. I don't think that Halach Ma'anya is actually inviting people to our meal right now. That's not what the purpose of Halach Ma'anya is. The purpose of Halach Ma'anya is to quote from the first Seder that ever happened in Jewish history. Listen, when you put the quotes in, Kol dichvin yetev eichol, isn't us telling everybody to come to our meal, but it is us quoting what people said at the first Seder in history. Look at what it says. And this is what they said. This is what they said at the first Seder. Anyone who is famished should come and eat. Anyone who wants, yetev v'yivsach. V'yivsach comes from the word korban pesach. Anybody should eat our korban pesach. Now, there aren't many times in Jewish history where the Korban Pesach was eaten outside of Eretz Yisrael, but it is pretty clear here that the Jews who were eating the Korban Pesach were not yet in Israel. How do I know that? How do I know that the Jews that were eating the Korban Pesach were not yet in Israel? Take a look right here. The next line is Hashata Hacha, now we are here. Next year we'll be in the land of Israel. In other words, the Jews who were saying this text were specifically not yet in Israel, nevertheless eating the Korban Pesach, saying this year we are slaves, next year we will be free people. Altogether, these are the words that the Jewish people at the first Seder in Jewish history, before they'd ever made it to Israel, were saying at their Seder, meaning the reason that we start off with Halach Ma'anya is so that we can start off with Seder number one. Seder number one. It's time to quote Seder number one at our Seder. This is what the Jewish people were saying at their first eating of the Korban Pesach, when they had not yet made it to Israel, when they had not yet tasted in the fullest way possible freedom. It's not necessarily about inviting people at that stage, but it's about invoking Seder number one before we even start the rest of Magid. Pause. Any clarifications needed there? Got it. Moving on. Here's what I want to do with you right now. Very quickly, I want to paint a picture for you of famous Siddarim throughout Jewish history. Let me tell you right now the following. My dating, not dating in that way, my dating of history is not perfect, but it's there to make a point. Initially, I put the historical dates, but now you'll see if you look right here, I say here, Seder number two in Jewish history. Seder number 40 in Jewish history. Now, they weren't necessarily having a Seder like they were having, you know, at William Haberman's house or at Matan's house or at Avi at your house. Not exactly the same, but they were sitting around the Korban Pesach and having a Seder. What was Seder number two in Jewish history? Seder number two in Jewish history, we're told about in Bamidbar. If anybody was learning, anybody in 10th grade was learning Bamidbar this year, it starts with the Korban Pesach Sheni. There's a big conflict with the second time Pesach comes around. The Jews want to celebrate Pesach, but some of them are Tamei. So Moshe actually invents a take two to the holiday called Pesach Sheni. But Pesach number two, we know, is celebrated when the Jews enter a new stage in their Jewish history. Not their existence in Egypt, not their existence in Israel yet, but their existence in the Midbar. That's Seder number two, and we know that every generation, through the time that the Jews were in the desert, they made a Korban Pesach. It was a God exception, the one time you were allowed to do a Korban Pesach outside the precincts of the Beit HaMikdash. That takes us from Seder number one in Jewish history to Seder number two through 40 in Jewish history. That's at least what I can assume. The next time that a story of Pesach comes up, Seder number, this should really be 41, I'm sorry. Seder number 41, we're told in Sefer Yehoshua, when the Jewish people enter Israel, what they enter in Nisan, because it is a time of renewal, and one of the first things that they do is they celebrate Pesach. Vayishbot haman mimachorat, that day, right before Pesach, the man that they've had subsisting on for 40 years stops, and they actually celebrate Pesach. They actually celebrate Pesach and eat matzot. In other words, we see right here in Jewish history, one, it seems like it's really important at stages of renewal or newness for the Jewish people to tell their Korban Pesach or their Pesach story. Each stage of renewal, the Jewish people emerge as a nation for the first time, surrounds the Korban Pesach. The Jewish people start their time in the desert, there's a Pesach. The Jewish people start entering Israel, happens around Pesach. I'm going to keep on moving forward a little bit to other famous moments where Pesach happened. This is Seder number 500, okay? I'm approximating. Chizkiyahu, a famous king of the Jewish people, one of the last golden eras of Malchut Yehuda, existed in around the year 800 BCE. Yetziat Mitzrayim, historically, we say happened around the year 1313 BCE, according to some calculations. And we'll see how that kind of plays up. So they say around 500 years have passed between the King Chizkiyahu and the original Seder back in the time of Sefer Shemot. And here what happens is Chizkiyahu does a national tshuva movement. He decides, you know what? Malchut Yisrael has just been destroyed. That was a kingdom up north. Now it's time, Malchut Yehuda, let us come together as a people again and try to restore our old glory. Do you know what time he calls to do that? He specifically does it over Pesach. Pesach is a time of renewal. It's a time of rejuvenation. He wants people to come together for a Seder of sorts and celebrate Pesach to renew the nation. 100 years later, as the Jewish people are on the brink of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, another famous king called Yoshiyahu, in one last attempt to kind of keep the Jewish people together, he brings them together Ba'et HaPesach, during the time of Pesach, and they literally talk about how that year, the Pesach that was celebrated, the Korban Pesach that they did, was unlike anything that had been done beforehand in the history of the Jewish people since Shmuel Hanavi. In other words, we see at many important stages in Jewish history, now still the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Jewish people come together around their Seder, which at that time had a Korban Pesach, to kind of celebrate renewal and rejuvenation. Pausing. Are people with me on this moving through Jewish history right now? You'll get the connection in a little bit. Here we are. Moving on to the next moment in Jewish history. Ezra. Ezra existed not in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, but after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, he is one of the leaders who brought the Jewish people back in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash in around the year 500 BCE. And the first time, one of the first times that he brings all of the Jewish people together, he brings everybody together over Sukkot, but then he brings everybody together on Pesach as well. I say this is Seder number 800. Right? There's been around 800 years that have passed between the first Seder that the Jews had, demonstrated by the words Halach Ma'anya, the first time that they all celebrated each other's freedom, and now the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. Around 800 Seders have gone by. Ezra says it's time, we're back for this, to build the second Beit HaMikdash. Let's do it. Let's come together and have a Pesach, another sign of renewal and rejuvenation. Pause. Moving on. In our Haggadah, we know of one Seder that is explicitly talked about. It's a famous Seder. It happens in Bnei Brak. Hopefully not Bnei Brak of this year. You don't want to be there. Maaseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, v'Rabbi Yoshua, v'Rabbi Elazar, ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, v'Rabbi Tarfon. Five famous Talmidei Chachamim who exist after the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. They think that some people say that they were actually discussing the revolt, the Bar Kochva revolt at that time, which is why I dated it to around the year 130 CE. Which would mean that this Seder of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua probably would have been around Seder 1,450, give or take a decade or so. Meaning at this point, thousands of Sedarim have happened. At this point, what's unique though is that they no longer have the Pesach at their Seder. They no longer have a Korban Pesach, and this probably resembles a little bit more of what our Seder nowadays is, a little bit more of talking about the Halachot, telling the stories of the Seder, maybe their own unique shtick that they do with their Seder. At my Seder, we have those little frogs and we do frog races. You know, you like push the bottom of the frog and they jump. So we do like frog races out back. So maybe they were doing that at their Seder. I don't know. But it seems like at this stage, we've gone through now recorded in history. Let's see how many Sedarim. Seder number one. This is the time of Moshe Rabbeinu while they're still in Egypt. Seder number two in the Midbar. Seder number three, Yehoshua and Bnei Israel. Or Seder number 41. Seder number 500, the Seder of Chizkiyah Melech. Seder 600 BCE. Seder number 600, I'm sorry, the Seder of Yoshiyahu. Seder number 800 would be the Seder of Ezra and Nehemiah. Seder number 1450 happening in the year 130 BCE, 130 CE would have been the Seder after the second Beit HaMikdash with Rabbi Akiva and Bnei Brak with all his friends. Pause. Any questions right now? A lot of Sedarim happening in Jewish history. Moving on. This is an incredible Haggadah. I don't know if you guys have heard of a Sarajevo Haggadah. It's an incredibly famous Haggadah. One of the most valuable in the world. The Sarajevo Haggadah is now, I think, in Yerushalayim. And one of the famous things about it is its illustration and also the history that it had, because it seems like the Sarajevo Haggadah was illustrated around the year 1500, around the time of the Spanish expulsion. If you look like right here on the Halach Ma'anya, it's been analyzed and some of like the darker marks here are actually wine stains from when it was used 500 years ago, but they think it passed from there to Egypt, to Israel. There's actually a whole book called People of the Book about the Sarajevo Haggadah. You can see even here in D right here, some of kind of the Italian clothing, because it seems like it was actually in Italy at a certain time. At B over here at the bottom is actually a Spanish inquisitor who said that this Haggadah could still be used. Essentially, this Haggadah in a certain way tells the story of the hands that it passed through at different stages in Jewish history. The reason I point this out is because it, let's say Seder 2800 in history, meaning the Jews were expelled in around the year 1492. That was a Spanish expulsion, and the Inquisition started for many more years. So I would say Seder 2800 was when this Haggadah was probably used, and it seems for 400 or 500 years afterwards, as you can see from the wine stains, that continue to be used in century after century. Pause. Moving on to another Seder. If anybody was in a team with me last year, you may remember the story. I told it. It's about my grandfather, my great-grandfather, whose name was Pesach. He celebrated Seder 3,256 and Seder 3,257 in Jewish history in quite a unique way. What do I mean by that? One is, again, I told you, Yetziat Mitzrayim, according to some historical records, happened in the year 1313 BCE. This happened in Auschwitz in 1943 and 1944. My great-grandfather was in Auschwitz, and what happened was there was actually a person who worked in the kitchen was able to get together enough flour to make five matzahs, five large matzahs, and secretly the camp elected a group of 10 Jews, my great-grandfather, whose name was Pesach, amongst them, to celebrate Pesach by committing not to eat any chametz and only subsisting off of the half a matzah that they were given at Pesach, and I think the soup that they had as well. And that year in 1943, as well as the following year in 1944, although it was with other participants, my Zeta, great Zeta Pesach, actually lived off of that matzah. And my father, I was never zocha to meet him, but my father remembers at a Seder every year, at Yachatz, when they would split the matzah in half, he would hold up the matzah, that half a matzah, and say, this is what I lived off of for 2 years. And I'll just read this inside. He says, the minyan had made it through the week. Mashiach did not come. There is no illustrious redemption. But 10 men in Auschwitz walked a little taller. Their stance slightly prouder. They had defied the heinous enemy and had stood steadfast in their faith. Those close by who had watched the tent sacrifice were emboldened by their actions, uplifted by their contagious spirits. They whispered of the noble feat until a great number in the camp were quickly privy to the knowledge of an entire minyan, fulfilling the commandment of eating matzah and the holy day and keeping Pesach in their midst. Not every member of the minyan survived to conspire to bake matzah next year. But those that did paved the way for others, and once again, in 1944, 10 men in Auschwitz had matzah for Pesach. By this time, many inmates were aware of what was happening and silently cheered the minyan on. In the end, word of the deed got out, and when the week of Pesach came to close, merciless reprisal was exacted in the grueling appals at Auschwitz Fields. And this is my great Zadie Pesach being quoted. But a whole Pesach had passed before they knew. I didn't care what they would do to me. It was worth it to have matzah on Pesach in spite of them. It was all worth it. Pesach would say, this is actually saying Pesach was his name, remembering with satisfaction a broad grin stretching across his face. Hey, Tzvi. Just summarizing where we are right now. We've gone through now a number of Siddurim in Jewish history, starting with Seder number 1 of Halach Ma'anya, getting up to Seder number 3,256, and Seder 3,257, celebrated by my great-grandfather in whatever way he could at Auschwitz. Here we go. Now we go back to our initial question. Why not just tell the Seder the story of Shmot? Why is it that we don't just say the text in the Haggadah? I think that all starts with the following Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Masechet Psachim, Perek Yud Pasuk Dalid. Specifically says the following is how we tell a story. Matchil bignut umisayem b'shevach. We have to start with something disgraceful, meaning when it was bad for us, and then end b'shevach. V'doresh me'arami oved avi. And the text that we're specifically supposed to quote at our Seder is Arami oved avi. The text of Arami Oved Avi, not the text of Shmot, the text of Arami Oved Avi. Does anybody know the context of Arami Oved Avi? What is the context, the mitzvah? Perfect, but packing up, when was this text recited? What mitzvah were you doing? The mitzvah was Bikurim. The mitzvah was Bikurim. It's one of the last mitzvot in the Torah. It specifically says as follows. Jews are told by Moshe Rabbeinu, before they go into Israel, Moshe's not going to make it. He says, one day, you're going to have fresh fruit. And that first of that fruit, I'm going to want you to bring to the Beit HaMikdash. And when you get to the Beit HaMikdash one day, I want you to recite the following text, which will serve, not Shmot, but Arami Oved Avi will serve as the foundation of our text that we recite at the Seder. when you bring the Bikurim text, when you bring the Bikurim, these first fruits, to Beit HaMikdash one day, you're going to say the following. Anita me'amarta lifnei Adonai Elohecha. You should recite the following. Arami Oved Avi. My father, we're going to do the traditional interpretation. My father was a fugitive Aramean. We'll talk about here. Arami Oved Avi is Yaakov was down in Lavan's house. Vayered Mitzrayim, and he went down to Egypt. Vayagor sham bipnei me'at. Vayhi sham legoy gadol v'atzum ra'av. Vayareo tanu ha-mitzrim. Vayanunu v'aytnu aleinu avogadah kasha. In other words, you're going to go and you're going to start talking about what the Egyptians had done to you in the past. Moshe went through Egypt, but he's talking, listen to the following. Moshe, standing on the brink of going into Israel, is talking about how in the future you'll bring the Bikurim. And when you bring the Bikurim, you will recite this text called Arami Oved Avi, invoking what had happened to you in the past when you were in Egypt. Vanitzak el Adonai Eloheinu, we called out to God, Vaishma Adonai et Koleinu, and God called out to us, Vayar et Onyenu vet Amalenu vet Lachatzenu, and God saw us, Vayotzienu Adonai Mitzrayim, and God took us out of Egypt, Biyad Chazaka, Uvizro Netuya, Uvimora Gadol, Vatot Muftim, and God took us out of Egypt and did all these great things. And he brought us here, and he gave us this great land. Why is this the text? In other words, I'm saying, specifically, Chazal say, we're not talking about Shemot. The way we're going to tell a story is through Arami Oved Avi. Now, what we creatively do at the Seder is we actually take each line and split it apart. We go, Vanita Ve'amarta, and then we say some lines from Shemot. And then we say, Am Gadol V'Rav Etzum, and we say some lines from Shemot. What is the message in this? And this is where everything I do comes together. It's a quote from Gil Reich, a family friend. He says the following. People often wonder why the central text of the Haggadah is not directly about the Exodus. Rather, it's the Bikurim text, where the Israeli farmer brings his first fruits to Jerusalem temple and thanks God for our salvation and for all of his blessings. Here's the big line, guys. If you're spacing, here's the big line. That's because the Seder night isn't about the Jews in Egypt. It's about those of us moved by their story. The goal of the Seder night is not necessarily purely to say, oh, that's what happened to them and them. The goal of the Seder night is to figure out how that story influences who we are today. The person who brought up the Bikurim, what's incredible about that text is it's not telling Shemot, it's talking about a person who didn't experience the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim on their own, but nevertheless feels a deep impact of how the fact that those Jews made it out of Egypt and God brought them to Israel has a direct impact on his produce and his life right now. It's about telling the story in the past tense, in the sense that this story that happened back then deeply impacts me nowadays. That's why I went through each Seder going through everything. I said, we start with Seder number one, and we start off our Seder with, this is what the Jews said at Seder number one. And this is Seder number 2, and this is Seder number 41, and this is Seder 500, and this is Seder 600. And every generation, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua to Chizkiyahu to Ezra to Rabbi Akiva to Jews in the Spanish expulsion to my great-grandfather, each of them were doing another Seder and telling not a story, but their story in the way that their story reflected and was influenced by the original Yetziat Mitzrayim. In other words, every year Seder is another link in that generational chain of Sidarim. The goal of the Seder is not just to focus on what happened in Shemot. The goal is to focus on how what happened in Shemot influences us, which is how I'm going to creatively, in I think a little bit of an exegetical way, darshan the following phrase, which I know Mr. Englander has another read on. Listen to the following. There's a phrase which this year I read in an entirely different way, which goes the following. Bechol dor vador chayav adam lirot et atzmo k'ilu hu yatzam mitzrayim. In a way, I think this is one of the challenges of the Seder, but let me explain how this challenge is unique. Within every generation, a person must see how it is as if he himself in his generation left Egypt. Listen to how this is a little bit different than the traditional reading. Usually the idea is we live in the year 2020, and I have to transport myself backwards to the year 1313 BCE to try to envision what it would have been like to be a Jew who goes out of Egypt. I'm saying maybe read this a little bit differently. Part of the challenge of this text is to take the year 1300 BCE and see how it applies to our generation right now. Within every generation, we have to figure out a way how our generation is influenced by the Tziat Mitzrayim story. How the Seder that we're about to have this year is part of the link and chain of generations of Sidarim. What uniquely informs our Pesach story this year? In other words, I think it's important to go into this year thinking the following. This year, according to one calculation, is Seder 3,333 in Jewish history. It is the year 2020, 1313 BCE, the Jews came out of Egypt. This is year 3,333 where the Jews will be celebrating their Seder. Now, the way we celebrate our Seder is different. We may not have a Korban Pesach. Our Haggadot may be a little bit different. We know that we have a state of Israel now. We know that we've gone through a lot in the past generation, but you could even say in the past month. What exactly is Seder 3,333 going to be? What will our generation's story be? What is this year's story? How will this year's Seder be remembered? That's part of the challenge, not just transporting ourselves backwards, but taking the history and bringing it forwards. I think that's one of the reasons we don't just recite the text of Shemot, but instead we recite a Haggadah, which is a compilation, amalgamation, an aggregation of so many different moments in Jewish history, because in a way, what it doesn't want us to do is get caught up on just one story. It's the starting story. It's the most important story. Experientially, it's where everything begins, but it's one story of thousands of Sidarim over Jewish history that comprise the story of the Jewish people, Bechol Dor Vador, and every generation. So that's the challenge this year, guys. That's the challenge every year. The challenge is, how are we going to tell our story this year? In what way are the values of our forefathers from 3,000 plus years ago going to inform this year's Seder? That's Seder 3,333. This year is going to be quite a unique Seder. And the question is, how are we going to rise to the occasion? What are we going to do to make this Seder this year unique? You'll see at the bottom here, there are also some links. The link to what will our generation story be is obviously a Hamilton song, Who Will Tell Our Story. Excellent song. The last two are a video by Rabbi Sachs, 5 minutes, but really worthwhile, talking about what exactly is that story that we're trying to pass on. And the last article is an article by Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, where he actually goes through each part of the Seder, describing how each part of the Seder is actually more of a guide on how to tell a story and less of the story itself, meaning each stage in some way exemplifies how one should go about telling a story, who needs to tell a story, why we tell a story, what exactly a story is meant to convey without actually telling a story. I'll just end with one last thing. My rabbi, Rabbi Eliezer Cohen, Zichrono Livracha, every year used to not even say Magid. He would not say Magid. What? He wouldn't say Magid. Instead, every year he would pose a question to his family that they would have to think about in advance so that they could talk. They could talk about that text surrounding Sefer Shemot. One answer, which is beautiful but different than what we've talked about in this shiur, that one could also give is that Magid is a way to help get you through the story, a creative way to invoke values in the story. But one thing that I think the goal of the Seder is to get beyond that text, to really start good conversations, to the point where if you don't need to use Magid to do that, it's entirely fine. And you can really just talk about the story in any way you want. But I think the Seder is a brilliant way to kind of invoke all these lessons. That is the official end of this shiur. I'm happy to take any specific questions if you want, but wishing you all a wonderful and meaningful Seder 3,333.